Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. Now, this show is part of Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com, and you don't have to be a part of the group or the website to participate, but it is recommended because then you can get the full experience and read along with us as we go. And our contests, where I find content for the show, are also on that website. Pam! How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, too. It's good to be
awesome.
Here.
Yep, and you got a good lineup of poetry. Looking forward to reading and commenting on it. So.
Me, too. Yeah. And it looks like we have some callers, I would think.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do. Let me go ahead and start bringing them on one by one. First of all, we have area code 701, which I believe to be Casey. So welcome. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome, Casey.
And then we have area code 613. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, it's Lynn Gauthier.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
And then we have area code 512. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hello there, my friend. It's me, Frank.
Hi,
Frank. Welcome.
Hello there, my friends.
And that's it for now. It's a good lineup.
That is a good lineup. Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to start in with our callers. And, well, actually, first I'm going to start by saying what the contest was. Our contest this week was The Power of Words, and it was based on the quote, "There are times when words are the only tangible thing a hurting person is capable of reaching for. So whatever you do, don't be silent when another soul is attempting to reach out." And that was by Alpha. So we got some great responses to that. And I'm excited to hear what everyone had to say. Casey, are you good with being first?
Sure. I can do that.
All right. I've put your poem up on the board. So whenever you are ready, you can read that for us.
Okay. Beyond the fog. Raindrops sliding down windows. While puffs of fog exit my lips, I repeat our parting words to myself. My vision glosses over like the sliver of frost glazing my heartstrings. Words, they're only words. Stuck on replay in my mind, I'm skipping tracks. Mm-hmm. It won't bring you back. It can't bring you back. It won't bring you back. If only I could hide. Like so many things beyond the fog.
Great read and wonderful poem. I really liked this skipping tracks. That was great, the way you actually skipped it, like it was a track skipping. I thought that was great in the read and the way that you wrote it. The repeat of the parting words is really powerful. You know, those things stick in our minds, and to go over it and over it and over again in your mind, to even maybe say it out loud or kind of whisper it silently is a really powerful image, especially because I'm seeing, like, the fog that you describe exiting the lips as you're whispering it to yourself. I think the repetition is really good here with the "It won't bring you back, it can't bring you back, it won't bring you back." Even though you change it so it's not exactly repeated three times, it has that nice kind of almost chant-like feel of something that someone would say when they're really upset. And I can almost feel like the rocking as you say it, "It won't bring you back, it can't bring you back," in that almost like fetal position, panic mode, sitting by the window. I thought that this was a beautiful poem, and it works nicely with the prompt. Lynn, would you like to comment?
You said it all. That was an awesome comment for a beautiful poem. I could just feel it. It's a short poem, but it's all there. It's beautiful. It's got it's got variety in delivery, like the repetition. It's not at the end. It's almost at the end. It's a nice location for it. I'm on my cell phone on speakerphone, so I hope I don't know if it sounds okay.
I can hear you.
That's not good. I like how right at the beginning, the raindrops sliding down the window, it sort of boxes you in. You're looking at something that outside a window that's not going to be clear. It's going to be it sort of gets you in the mood for the whole poem. It's a beautiful poem. Brilliant. I loved it.
Nicely said, Lynn. Frank, would you like to comment?
Yes, of course. I thought this was a very creative variety with a very powerful state of admission and recollection. Analogy to the fog here, and it's good there that you added that that mystery there, because words themselves, we can be cloud words, you know, we can use you know, they can be such a way in which we can use a vessel or a method to disguise our words here. And when she says beyond the fog there, that is very, it's very visceral there. Because the notion there of Stockholm replay, my mind, I'm skipping tracks, is very much a visceral image there. So I thought it was very, very well written here. I like the way she approached the prompt there. And overall, it just had an exquisite metaphors above all.
I have to agree. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I really like this. This is a beautiful, heartfelt brevity. I like the repetitiveness of the words that she says a lot. I repeat our parting words to myself, you know, and then that word said, it won't bring you back, it can't bring you back, it won't bring you back. And that you know, the whole thing is just so, you know, deep in the idea that, you know, whether it's lost because it's a separation from a relationship or because somebody lost somebody through death or what, for whatever reason there's been a loss, you just, you know, you try so bad to comfort yourself with words, but in the end they feel empty and you just want to hide. And just an excellent write and very well done.
It was. Thank you, Pam. Frank, would you like to read your poem?
Yes, please. I mean, yes, of course. I mean, I don't know at this late hour if I'm saying the right words, but I meant yes, of course. Do you want me to post it?
Pardon?
Do you want me to post it? I don't see it on. Do I have to refresh?
Just refresh. I put it there.
All right. Just bear with me. Oh, there it is. I see it now. This is a PC. Well, first of all, I do apologize if I didn't enter the contest. I didn't really grab a moment there of my time there to be able to write a piece there. But I thought of the quote there, and I thought of a poem I wrote that it was somewhat could be inspired by that quote. And this poem is called Stigma of a Persona Non Grata, and it goes like this. There are men who are born geniuses. There are men who are destined to the travails of the mundane world. There are men who are gifted intellectuals. There are men who are pretentious nemesis. The world we live in is a society of machines and useless ideologies exhausted. A world only understood by the powerful benefactors of greed and false prophecies, and intolerable envy for the brass gems tainted who are ostracized for their disconformity. I am one of those ostracized for my disconformity to the obsolete morality I am imposed. I am a philosopher and an admirer of Plato, Aristotle and Socrates, but I too march to my own beaten path, never to acquiesce to the implacable vagaries of the imperious royalists nor vile oligarchs. To bow to the reverence that bore me to death, enslaved me to an inconceivable fate. Within the pages of history, there are men of greatness, but others of great depravity, inquisitions and malefactors of injustices, instigators of man's gruttle downfall. I am condemned by the judges of society, who deem me unnatural and perilous, because I am eccentric. My only crime is this, and bring me before the gallows to be hanged in the public square like a martyr's. It is due to this reason that I must take accountability for my transgressions, yet my only indiscretion is being eccentric. I have not committed a murder, but society thinks I am an impious criminal. This I must query. If I am guilty of this crime, there are not those pompous lots that judge me. I am not guilty of the crime of hypocrisy. If so, let the first man, without transgression, cast the first stone afterwards. I am a man, amongst others, who walk this earth, one who must bear the stigma of the persona non grata. Life is ephemeral, but art is eternal in the form.
Beautiful read and a wonderful poem. Lynn, I heard your excitement. Would you like to start the comments?
Well, I mean, there's so many excellent lines. Like, I would really have to reread this. But I love the whole idea that there's a price to pay for being eccentric. You know, like we like to be, well, to various degrees, everyone, most people like to be eccentric to some degree, but there's a price to pay. Like somebody's going to have their nose out of joint because you dare to be different. And so, but this goes like way beyond that. It's the lines in here are fabulous. And I like the way that it's just like two little lines, like little stanzas of two lines, because it would be like too hard to digest all without the visual breaks, you know. This really helps focus the accent on each and every idea that's put forward, and there's a lot of like really I want to say it's not powerful words, but really words that pop, you know, in each line. It's I really want to reread this poem, so I'll let other people give smarter comments than me, because I just want to reread the poem. And I love the last line. Life is ephemeral, but art is eternal. That was, wow, a really excellent way to close it up.
Thank you very much. If I can say briefly there. Obviously, this poem there's an inference there of Oscar Wilde here. But also the thing is that I too am eccentric like him. So this is why I do find myself related to him in many regards, and in particular our appreciation of art as artists. So this is why I took that. And it is true that the notion of everyone out there who is eccentric as an artist must pay the price, unfortunately. And this is why I called it the stigma of the persona non grata.
I think that's wonderful. Lynn, I agreed with your comments, and like Frank, this was amazing. You have such amazing diction. You know, your word choices are great. Your phrasing is very intelligent, and it's very thought-provoking. Like Lynn said, I could read it a few times and like really put a lot of thought into each one of your lines, because they all are quite powerful, and each section says something in itself, even though they're very brief stanzas. Each one says something important, and it all goes together so nicely. This is a really great piece.
Thank you very much, my dear. I do appreciate that.
Casey, would you like to comment?
I had a lot of fun listening to this. I thought it was really interesting, and my brain went a bunch of places because that's what it does. But your opener reminded me of the quote from William Shakespeare, some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. But your poem is more so about being ostracized. And I thought it was interesting, though, that you started out talking about people who are generally accepted by the public, and then you kind of get into yourself and why you're being ostracized. And I think it's really interesting because I think that it's sort of a curse to be both brilliant and human, because we kind of contradict ourselves when we are both, because I think people often condemn things that they don't understand. And so the more brilliant that you are, the more condemned you will be, and the less people will understand you, and the more that they'll hate you. but I think that it's a really interesting poem. I thought that it was really beautifully written, and I love your reading of it. I think you do a wonderful job reading. So,
yeah, I appreciate that, my dear. Thank you very much.
Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like this. First of all, it was an excellent read. I always appreciate your Oscar Wilde pieces because you can tell when somebody is very inspired by another poet or artist, and that it means something to them. And when you write through the voice of Oscar Wilde, you can hear that in your voice. I like how you mentioned how that he was inspired by other thinkers, other philosophers, such as Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. But I think to me the most important part of this piece, and everybody's brought up the fact about being ostracized for being different, but there's more to it than that. What we have to remember is that Oscar Wilde was arrested for having a relationship with another man.
Buggery. Yeah, they called it buggery.
Exactly. And so it's a reminder of how far throughout history we've come in our acceptance of people who are homosexual or who choose to love the person of their choice and not who society says they should love. And while we still have a long ways to go, this year poem, which is beautifully and elegantly worded, reminds us that there was a time in history when a man had to fear not only going to jail and the woman, but, you know, for loving someone of the same sex, but they had to fear their very lives. And so, you know, this really, honestly, it's delicately phrased, but it makes a powerful social statement, and very well done.
You're absolutely right, Pam. And we actually have one by Rob that we're going to do later on that is on the same subject, although unfortunately a more recent event that he's writing about.
I saw that one. Yeah.
It's quite dark, so I'm actually going to save it for later on in the show, mostly because I'm going to cry. I'm not ready for it. But yes, it's still an issue. So later on we're going to touch more on that subject. I'm not ready yet because as brilliant as Rob is, that's going to be a tough one to read. Lynn? I don't have you in this contest, but do you have a poem that you'd like to read?
Oh, I thought that's weird. The one I had doesn't quite fit. I must be mixed up here.
You are in one of my contests.
I thought it was today.
We can do that one. I didn't have very many entries in that one, so.
Okay. So maybe I should do that one.
Sure. That's fine. I'm just looking for it here. And, of course, my internet went out. Here we go. I'm going to have to do it on my cell phone.
If you give me a minute, maybe I'll look for another one.
Okay. Well, then why don't you do that? You find it, and I will... do one in the meantime. Sorry, my computer froze for a second, but I think I'm back now. Here we go.
I have a tribute to Leonard Cohen. Do you want me to do that one?
Sure, yeah. You can post that one there.
Okay, it's called My Heart Flutters. My Heart Flutters.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, you want me to find it?
Yes, let's post it on the board so everyone can follow along.
Do I post it or you?
You can if you have it handy.
Okay, I don't think I know how to post it.
Okay, I'll do it then. So it's My Heart Flutters?
Yes, okay.
Flutters.
Okay.
Here
I hope it's smooth because I haven't reread it in a while, so.
That's okay.
Okay, not to mess it up. Okay, My Heart Flutters. Deep and deliberate. The voice of a soul who circled at the gates of hell, come back loaded with a message to set things right. I'd recognize his voice anywhere, bluesy, sultry, seductive, intoxicating. Shout out to my very core, call out to my very soul. Transfixed, quivering, I'm a captive hummingbird. It's not the words he says or those he doesn't. It's the music, the delivery. How it emanates from depths within resonates beneath my skin. Bearing his soul, a vulnerability unlike any I've ever seen, whispering mercilessly, strumming at my heart. His hot breath at the nape of my neck. Kissed and caressed, blissfully given, possessed, and spent. Tears that cry to be set free, feeling mellow, transported on a cosmic journey, clinging to his wing, bringing me to heaven's gate. End poem.
Great read, an absolutely beautiful poem. That is a wonderful tribute to Leonard Cohen. I really liked the way that you described, like, the physical sensation of, like, getting so into the music, quivering, and to call yourself a captive hummingbird makes me think of, like, they flutter so fast with so to have your heart, which you put in the title, Heart Flutters, heart going the speed of a hummingbird. That's such a creative way of putting that. And I like that you describe it like emanating, resonating beneath your skin. There's something about music that you can actually feel sometimes, and not just like the way that the bass actually like shakes you, but to really connect with music so much that you feel it that way, that you feel like this intimacy with him, imagining him kissing you. That is like really an intimate experience of music, and I just love the way you describe that connection.
Thank you.
Pam, you're welcome. Pam, would you like to comment?
Absolutely. That was an excellent read, and I have to agree, this is a wonderful tribute to Leonard Cohen, to the experience of listening to music and how it brings you to that point of that intoxicating ecstasy. Now, I will admit I'm not a huge fan of Leonard Cohen singing. There are certain songs of his that I really like, but the majority of them, I don't know. I just find his voice, I don't know what it is, but I will say that as a poet.
Don't ruin it for me, Pam.
Yeah. Well, you know, each to their own, and he does have he does have some songs that he did. They're just spot on for his voice, like the one that I can't remember what it's called exactly, but about being the woman's man and being there for her, and being whatever she wants him to be. Really, that's a really good one. But as a lyricist, as a poet, the man is absolutely brilliant, and I think this was a perfect write for this show because he's one of those that shows how words have the power to emotionally move people.
people. So
that's very good. Very good. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You know, I think you're right, Pam. It does fit the theme because of that, because his words have that impact on people who don't know him. They still feel that connection. Frank, would you like to comment?
Yes, first I apologize. I don't know what happened there. I think I got cut off there. I thought this piece here, maybe it's me, but I don't really listen too much to him, but I still get the notion there of what she's conveying here. I thought it was a very reverent and central piece, and I thought it was a brilliant ode in the metaphors that were very exquisite here. The notion here of recognizing a voice here, you know, in particular when we have only the voice and through the interpretation of the song to hear, it does mean something to some regard because it's the only thing we can identify at times with the artist. I thought you did a fantastic job there when you say, deep and deliberate, the voice of a soul circles up the gates of hell. Come back loaded with a message to sing, set things right. There's in that recognition of the voice that you say there. Of course, you go on saying he's sultry, seductive, intoxicated. Well, I mean, I'll defer to you on that. But I thought this was, I like that notion there of the hummingbird there. You've got some very exquisite metaphors here. Imagery is here, was perfect here. And I thought you did a tremendous job there, giving a good tribute to the Mr. Cohn.
Thank you.
Nicely said, Frank. Casey, what did you think?
I thought it was a wonderful tribute. I'm kind of with Pam. I'm not going to lie, I'm not a huge fan of his music, but as you were reading it, I could hear his voice. It's a very recognizable voice. And it's very powerful how you conveyed that. And as I get towards the bottom of your poem, and as you were reading it as well, it's almost as if... I hope this isn't going to come off in a vulgar way. I don't mean it to, but it's almost as if you're making love to the voice or the music. And I think that it's a beautiful way of expressing how a person's song or expression, a person's self-expression can impact you. Because so often, there's that one song or that one poem or that one story that you read or heard or whatever, and it intimately is connected to you, almost like making love. And I think that you did a really beautiful job of portraying that.
Thank you.
Great comment, Casey. The next one is by Neutron Bomb, Without a Word, by Neutron Bomb. I keep my words behind stitched lips, sewn with silken strands through an eyelid of steel, trying to contain the wailing that wells from within. You left without a word, without an embrace. Your notes I cling to with every ounce of fiber. They're all that I have left. Whispering in the recesses of my mind, like slowly built stalactites. Your image is etched, filling a cavernous void, like centuries-old cave drawings. Ensconced in mosquitoes, I trawl through memories long forgotten to pinpoint when you decided to leave mortality behind. The sting of the mosquitoes is formidable. Drawing blood en masse, there was an enclave to swat away. Much like the ideation of in seemingly fleeting moments, you greeted the sun with a pounding chest, fireflies arcing through the sky as your feet scuffed the carpeted concrete floor. You checked out before high tea, before chocolate raspberry meringue tarts, without a word. Your jaw wired shut. End poem. Mm. Oh, wow, Neutron. Mm. This is intense. beautifully worded, and I'm sorry I stumbled on that one word. I thought that this was really great. It made me feel her loss, and the idea that she's clinging on to those words, those notes, are all that are left of this person. And those words are so important to her, having that memory of what this person said. Someone's letters to you can be so precious. I'm a bit of a hoarder with letters, I have to admit. If I get old school snail mail, I keep them. I'm glad that Neutron did, if this is a true story, because having that once you've lost someone is really precious. And the story of the mosquitoes and the blood drawing away, I really have to dig into what that is metaphorically, but I feel like there's something there in those mosquitoes that I'd like to ponder some more. Lynn, what did you think?
Yeah, that certainly was a surprising imagery about the mosquitoes, and I'm curious too because they come up more than once. And then there's another thing about some other insects, the twice for the mosquitoes that I noticed, and another insect somewhere. And then at the end, the imagery of the high tea and the chocolate raspberry meringue tart. So it's the contrast of the imagery is really like stunning.
You're right. It's extreme. Well said.
Yeah. It's the real. I agree. I like it because it's stunning. Yep.
It is. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I have to say that the poems that I've read of hers, they all seem to be very, very intense, very powerful. And this is no exception. The whole notion of the first line, the first two lines there, I kept my words behind stitched lips, sewn with silken strands through, what is that word there, through an eyelet of steel, trying to contain the wailing that wells from within. That's very visceral there. The imagery that evokes there is one of the inability to be able to speak, you know, and then, of course, you left without a word. I mean, this whole poem just exudes and it permeates with just a haunting effect here. This rite is very haunting there. There's so much that it seems like it's just drenched in memories here. And that I wouldn't say bitter, but I say these types of memories are very real. They're very intense there. You know, and that notion there of that last line, without a word, your jaw wired shut. You know, I don't know to what extent that's just metaphorical or to what extent it was certain analogous to a physical thing that transpired with this individual. But I thought it was very thought-provoking, mm-hmm. as was the case with a neutron bomb. She brings a lot of abstraction into pieces.
She does. I'm a really big fan of her writing. My impression from this poem was that the person committed suicide because it says you chose to leave mortality. But I don't know the real story behind this, of course.
That's what I felt as well. That's the feeling I got. But I didn't want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not certain. Casey, would you like to comment?
I also was thinking suicide, and not only suicide. I'm thinking that this person was young. And the reason talks about, you checked out before high tea, before chocolate raspberry meringue tarts, without a word, your jaw wired shut. I think perhaps the jaw wired shut, I agree. Also, I think it was physical, possibly from the type of suicide. I also think when they remember this person, another reason I think that they're young, you greeted the sun with a pounding chest, fireflies arcing through the sky as your feet scuffed the carpeted concrete floor. And when I think of a carpeted concrete floor, I often think of like a gymnasium floor. So maybe in school. It's a very sad poem. The mosquitoes that are hiding the that portion, I would not want to remove them. I feel like it would be very painful.
Yes. And I think that you're right about them being young. I wondered about that too with the before high tea. It's like they left before the sweetest part of life. That's kind of how I interpreted that ending. So that was a good observation to share. Thank you. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, as always, Neutron's writing is just extraordinary, beautiful and powerful, just strong imagery and metaphors. I really like what you all had to say. I do feel like the mosquitoes kind of represent those memories that kind of keep charging at you, those emotions that you want to swat away, that you don't want to deal with, but they just keep coming at you. I wonder if high tea actually has to do with the time of day that they died, although I think it does work well for a metaphor, the whole idea, like you said, checking out before the sweetest part of life. But the fact that high tea is usually served around 5 p.m., that might have something to do with it. I felt like the jaw wired shut was more metaphorical, like as if the person felt like they had nobody they could talk to, or they could no longer explain themselves. There was no words left to say. Just an absolutely amazing write and very well done.
I completely agree, Pam. I don't think I've had you read yet, have I?
No.
Would
Not
you like
yet.
To read the one by... I'm going to make you do it now.
All right.
The one by Bloom B.
All right, cool. Let me just create my poet, and I will go ahead and give that a read. All right. Break Listening Barriers by Blatant B. And it goes like this. A series of stub dots and dashes as accents transmit a message of hope translated by finger signs so the deaf cannot hear but listen. Squiggly figures formulate ideas in jargon and universal numbers. Although most of them propaganda, the messages are clear as day. Scripts display visual words, opening ocular descriptions of dreams and reality. Welcoming into your cerebral cortex. Vibrations wallow through vortices, rattling the mouse's incus and shapes. Painting by decoding words that design pictures throughout your nerves. Listening to make humans turn around from death as it resounds over and over again, traveling vast distances. An empty room compounded with white chart paper allows a black marker to express open the portal where blind, deaf, and daft can see. Just a tiny, fragile whisper can change this world, a mere wisp, and it can disappear. The idea will linger as an everlasting effect. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I thought this was really interesting from you know, it makes you think about the concept of, like, letters being just some squiggly lines that we decided have meaning, and those letters forming words, and those words being assigned meaning, and sentences being assigned meaning, and it's like this whole construct of language, and then the impact that has where you can get your ideas across to other people, and maybe those ideas stick with someone. And they can be used for good, they can be used for bad. They talk about propaganda and things like that. But words have impact, and those dots and dashes and things that we, you know, have put on paper or on computers to express ourselves have lasting effects. A fragile whisper can change this world. Mere wisp, and it can disappear. The idea will linger as an everlasting effect. The idea that the things that we say could like reverberate through history, and something that you say to someone could make them think about something that makes them do things differently. And it's like there's a chain reaction sometimes of what your words do to people. So this is a really thought-provoking write, in my opinion. Frank, what were your thoughts?
No, I mean, I don't know if I can outdo you there. You said such an extraordinary comment there, or a few there. I thought this whole notion there of break listening barriers, it's very thought-provoking indeed, because most of the times we depend on our audition there, you know, to listen to things, and that's how we digest the way we react instinctively or intuitively. But when you think of people who are deaf there, who don't have that the capacity to hear, they have to rely on signs. They have to rely on the visual aspect of our senses. And what he describes, and he goes through a whole, this poem is very cerebral, I would say. You know, he's very descriptive there in the aspect of a neurological relationship there with the brain, with sound, with words, with so much of what entails our sentience there in every aspect, in every regard. But I did like the fact that he ended this here with a tiny fragile whisper, what you said there, can change this world. I mean, a whisper, it can disappear. The idea will linger as an everlasting effect. Yeah, it is true there, it's haunting there, but there's so much that words can convey, you know, and what they can mean, what they are attached to. But it all depends, I would think, in what how we receive them, and how we, more importantly, how we understand them. So I thought this poem here was very ruminative. It had a lot of a sense of philosophy here, and it had a little bit of psychology as well. So I thought in this regard this poem was good. I don't know if it was good enough to keep me awake, because I'm going to think about this poem before I head out. But it was a very thoughtful piece there. Now, I do have to go now there, my dear. So I say my goodbyes to everyone. I don't know who else is on. I think it's... forgive me for not knowing the names of the others who are on there. But I must say my thanks as always, and I enjoy my time being with you and the others, and I'll see you again soon. Take care, my friends. Buenas noches.
Thank you so much for calling, Frank. You're an excellent reader, and I appreciate your comments.
Always a pleasure, my dear.
Good night.
Good night.
And good night to Lynn. I see on the board that she also had to leave us. So good night to both of you, and thank you both so much for calling. It's great to have you here to read your own poems and for your comments that you had for everyone else. Okay, so who has not commented on B? Casey, would you like to comment?
Hello. So I thought it was very interesting how he used, all of the different ways to listen in the poem. He brought up using signs with your hands. He brought up stubbed dots and dashes, which are for the blind. Squiggly figures, all sorts of different ways to perceive words. I thought that was really cool that he took that into account, because universally, I think that's kind of a really beautiful idea, is that universally everyone needs language in some capacity. To communicate is human. And I think that when he speaks of words and communications in this universal way, it says a lot about, and I don't want to get too philosophical, but it says a lot about humanity, and that's what I enjoyed about this poem.
I think you're absolutely right. It does speak to that, and I think that a lot of his pieces do. Really, if you connected with this one, you should check out the other ones by Leighton B. He tends to mix, like, science and philosophy. He'll go with, like, so many facts, and then he'll, like, slip a little bit of spirituality in there. He has a really interesting mix of that, where often you'd see one or the other, and this definitely makes you think about humanity. I think you're right about that. Pam, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
Absolutely, yes. As always, I do enjoy the fact that, as you mentioned, he mixes up philosophy and science. It's a wonderfully intelligent write. I like how it touches on language, and then how, as you mentioned, Faziana, language can be used for both good and evil. And, you know, it just, the right phrasing can sell a horrible idea to the most nicest of people, you know, and then also how throughout history language has changed and developed to meet needs, such as the needs of people who are deaf, or even how during World War One or World War Two, where they had the Navajo Indians language used to pass messages along. You know, I mean, there's so many different areas, you know, for the nonverbal, and where language and communication has changed over the years because, you know, to meet people's needs. And so just an excellent, thought-provoking write and very well done.
That was a great comment, and it's true. Language has evolved in so many ways, and there are all different ways for us to communicate, and I love that it has adapted to be accessible. Our next poem, I believe we have a SoundCloud by J.A. Overton.
Yes, we do. Are you ready for me to push play?
I am, thank you.
I feel your pain, for your heart's woven with mine. It's like we've pulled out and interwoven our veins and now conjoined. We have the same mind. My words are like daggers that embed deep within your heart, so devastating and so painful it hurts more if they depart. Then on the other hand, when spoken softly and in a calmer tone, they become more like a bandage that could heal the dagger's wounds. Your words are like an angel's wings that wrap around and hold. Your words fill me with wonder and futures yet to unfold. And if I throw a stone, you hit it back, because your words, you hold them sturdy like you hold that verbal baseball bat. Words can be deceiving, in an instant stop your breathing, make you gasp out loud, make you feel proud, tear apart the heart, shatter hopes and dreams, make somebody smile, and like a headlight they just beam. Words have consequences, so construct that sentence with thorough thought. Consider people's feelings before you let fly, because nobody wants to feel like they're dying on the inside. Words can be a blessing sent from heaven above. Words can be pure evil filled with hatred and no love. Words can inspire, fill a person with hope. Words can be humorous and make you laugh when told in a joke. So remember, before you speak, engage those brain gears. Play it back in your own head and listen to it with your own ears. And the most important part, always grease those gears, for it stops those gears binding, lessening the chance of bringing tears.
That was a great audio. Thank you so much, J.A. I really appreciate when you record your poems, since with the time difference and the long distance, it rarely get to have you call in live, but I love having the audio. I thought this was a great poem that makes you think about the different ways that words can impact people. I like that you encourage thought before speaking, which is really not something that we do enough, myself included, thinking about the consequences of your words and going over them yourself first and you know, maybe while still telling the truth. I like that you said grease those gears, you know, sweeten it up a little bit as you say what you have to say. I like that they were both daggers and bandages, that, you know, words can hurt or words can heal. And you have to think about the impact that you're having. If you could do one or the other, choose to heal. I thought that this was a really touching piece that, again, speaks of humanity and society and your hopes for using your words for good. I thought it was interesting how he sped it up for the part where it says words can be deceiving, instant you can stop breathing, make you gasp out loud, make you feel proud. And that is powerful. When a word makes you stop breathing, it's like that feeling of either fear, or it's so beautiful, or it's like so terrible. For a word to be able to have like a physical reaction like that just tells us how intense our thoughts can be just inspired by language. I thought this was a wonderful poem. Thank you, J.A., for sharing. Pam, what were your thoughts?
This is wonderful. I also appreciate that he makes the sound cards. He's got an excellent reading voice, and this flows really nicely. I like the way that he touches on the different effects that words have. Like, they can be calming, you know, or they can be wounding. And I think it's very important that he touches on the fact that sometimes we have to be careful about our words. We have to take time to really listen to somebody before we decide if we even need to say any words. So excellent writing, very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Casey, what did you think?
I also thought it was a very excellent poem. While I was listening to this, I feel like he's almost talking about, and I don't know if he's married or not or whatever, but like a significant other, because he begins with, "I feel your pain, for your heart's woven with mine. It's like we've pulled out and interwoven our veins, and now conjoined we have the same mind." And when I'm saying that, because it feels like when you get down to your words are like angels' wings wrapped around and hold. Words fill me with wonder, new futures yet untold. And if I throw a stone, you hit it back, because your words are, you hold them sturdy like you hold the verbal baseball bat. So it seems to me like he's talking about his partner. But then instead of talking to his partner, now he's talking about what words are. So then he defines words after that, and it opens it up. But this to me felt like he was talking about almost a marriage relationship and how words are exchanged and how words are impactful. And then at the end, I thought it was a nice finish, because he says, "So remember, before you speak, engage those brain gears, play it back in your own head and listen with your own ears. And most important part, always grease those gears." And it seems like he's talking to other married couples, because that's great advice in a marriage to remember that you have to grease those gears and you have to continually practice and use good language. I think it's good all over in general, but I feel this poem would work very well for a married couple scenario.
You know, I think that you're right. It does make those connections. And I think, and I could be wrong, that recently he was writing about divorce. So I think that would make sense in this case, whether it's real or not, and from the other poem, because if he saw the consequences of not being careful with your words, And then it does seem like at the beginning it's about a specific person, and it broadens as it goes, like you said. Maybe he's saying, like, learn from my mistakes or from my partner's mistakes, and be cautious about what you say, and maybe it is marriage advice. I mean, it could be advice in general, but I think you're right that it makes sense in a romantic sense. That was a good observation.
Thank you.
Casey, would you read the one by our list?
Yeah, let me get there. All right. Our list, the words I used to know. I had forgotten the way to the hut that I had traveled to so many times, so many days, so many moons, I would say, but no one marks moons anymore except hunters, and I am not one of them, nor a gatherer. I listen to old men tell how they felled the stags. I do not believe them. I am a wayfarer. To use the archaic words I used to love, the words I had forgotten, the words of time and eternity, the words of orange leaves on towering pin oaks, the words of circled, of shadowed, settling on gathering of snowfall in the Pyrenees, sever Spain from the continent. I had lost the language of the dirty, spray-painted sheep scampering over gray-bouldered kirks on mountaintops, boulders turning into mountains in the shadows, in the fog, in drifts of snow. There are no words for this now. Bleeding sheep drown them out, and yapping dogs. There are no words for the radiance of transcendence. Climb higher, I hear them say, higher into the haze of clouds. Circle, circus. Acrobatics on hillsides, balancing acts on rock slides, skimming streams in hard-toed boots. I had forgotten the way to the words far behind me. I have come to a gate, a steep still in shadow. No sheep can pass. Nothing looks familiar. Nothing looks strange. I saunter in a cloud of unknowing. I had known the words, worn smooth as stone, unscuffed by hard-toed boots, slick as snow melts, slide from France into Spain. This is the path of Santiago de Compostela, I hope I got that right, the route of St. James, who said, "Do not be double-minded, brethren. I cannot remember if I have been double-minded in my wanderlust. I have forgotten the way. If the words do not come, which mind sees the threshold, which mind circles the fog? What passes, what begins in wanderlust? I do not look backward. The way lies ahead, waiting, winding from the words. Splotches of lichen sprout orange and green. Go no higher for safety, no higher. They do not mention exile or ecstasy or the straight path of radiance. The circles in my words in mountain shadows. I must unlearn my wanderlust adrift in broken fields of stone. I had forgotten the way to the hut. Rocks obscure the path. Light ensures the path leads upward. Nothing is lost. Words hold their weight. Stags dance above me in fog."
Great read, thank you. And there were some tricky words in there.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm glad I gave this to you. this was really cool. It was a thought-provoking one as well. Lots of thinkers tonight, which I love. I like that he talked about how the language changes in terms of, like, the moons at the beginning. People don't mark moons anymore. And that's because, you know, technology has changed. Now we have our calendars really, like, often in our phones or our computers, and it's not even like a calendar on the wall anymore. People before that used the moon to mark time. And, you know, some people might still, but it's definitely changed. And for him to recognize that he is not a hunter or a gatherer is talking about, like, the roles of people changing, life changing. And life changing is reflected in words that we use. And he talks about listening to the old men and not believing them. So words are not always true. Words can be deception. I like that he talks about his love of archaic words. And I think that's true of many poets. And I'm often drawn to old-fashioned language in poems. So I like that he recognizes that in himself. And the nature that he describes is great. And the fact that he says that there is no word for it. You know, sometimes we lose those words if they're not said enough, if they're not something that we connect with. I mean, sadly, a lot of indigenous languages have been nearly lost or have been lost. Words that were connected more with nature have been fading away as people assimilate into cities, and we lose those descriptive natural words that we may have had in the past. I thought that this was very thoughtful, and I'd like to read it again and go over the details. That's the beauty of these things being in my contest. I have them all bookmarked, so I will go back and look them over as I judge the contest. But it's great to hear them out loud. It helps me process as well. What did you think about it as you read, Casey?
I loved that he took us on a journey, that he said he's the wanderer, you know, he's a traveler, he's a gatherer. Well, he's not a gatherer, he's this explorer guy. And in the beginning, he talks about how the old men tell him they felled the stags, but he did not believe them. And at the end, stags dance above me in fog. He has reached this height, and his belief is now there in front of him. And it's almost spiritual because we're climbing a mountain this entire poem. We're just going higher and higher and talking about transcendence. And it's almost like a spiritual thing at the end. And all of this to do with words and with history of words and how important it is to him and how it brings him closer to this higher place. I think it's just really a beautiful poem and really well done. The details, the little details that bring you to this climax at the end. And I love that they dance in fog because now he's in the clouds and they're dancing in the fog and you can't see the stag. So when you go back to the ground, you won't know they're there, but he will. And it's very wonderfully written. I really liked it.
That was a really great comment, and it was a journey. And you're right. Like he takes us on this sort of adventure that talks about the impact of language. But if it does have like a spiritual feel, like the stag feels symbolic, and I love that what you said there at the end about it being like. He's not going to be seen, but it's still going to matter. I can't quite put it into words, but I really appreciated that poem. Oh, and Pam is back. But Pam, I'm guessing you missed that poem by our list.
I did, and it's a lot to take in, so I'll skip commenting other than to say that I really always do enjoy our list's writing and appreciate him writing for the shows.
I have to agree. He has Some very intelligent writes. Definitely always makes me think. He's been entering more and more of my contests, which I really appreciate. I love when I get new regulars who connect well with the prompts, and he does. This next poem is by Lily the writer, and it's called Just a Phase. Reaching into my memory, my hand goes for the one shrouded in darkness. It does not sparkle nor gleam in the light. Instead, it absorbs the colors around it, sucking everything into its blackness. Despite this, the memory plays in my head. Immediately, my heart clenches from the past pain and suffering. I remember how I thought I could trust her as I laid my troubles at her feet, only to have them kicked away and be told that they were nothing. So as I stood there bare, naked and without armor, I shattered as the feelings, the thoughts that had been weighing me down were dismissed within a second. And as she walked away, leaving me broken and fractured, I wept for myself and wondered, who could ever love me now? That was years ago. Still, every now and then, I'm struck by it and get misty-eyed as I make a wish for that girl who came out to her mother to hear something other than, it's just a phase and poem. Wow, Lily, this is a powerful poem about how one sentence from someone you love in a moment this vulnerable can absolutely change you for your whole life. It can really haunt you what someone says when they're not acknowledging something that's very important to you, and to strip yourself of that armor and come to a place where you're sharing something and have that be dismissed is very painful. So I think the power of words, which is the prompt, was very strongly conveyed here, because there is that suffering. And I really like the way that it's described in the beginning as it does not sparkle or gleam in the light. Instead, it absorbs the colors around it, sucking everything into its blackness. This particular memory, those words, and specifically words, take away the joy of everything around it. It tarnishes all the memories surrounding it. Not only is it not a happy memory, but it corrupts the others. That is a powerful statement. Thank you for sharing this with us, Lily. It's a very vulnerable piece, and I appreciate that very much. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I have to agree. It is a very vulnerable piece. It's raw. It's honest and heartfelt. I think there's no more important moment in a parent's life than when your child comes to you with something that's weighing heavy on them, or something that's life-changing, or something that, you know, like the coming out when, you know, they need somebody to love and support them, so they go to somebody. And when that person doesn't, and they the whole idea of now, who do I trust? It does have a beautiful, raw honesty to it, and very well done.
Casey, what did you think?
I think she, I'm trying to get my words here. My words escaped me, but she told it very well. The piece where she says, I remember how I thought I could trust her as I laid my troubles at her feet, only to have them kicked away and be told they were nothing. Different kind of trust breaking when it's a parent, I think, because you rely on them. You spent your entire life relying on this person, trusting this person with your life. And then one day that trust is broken, and now here she is not knowing who could ever love her. Who could she trust when the person who fed her, bathed her, clothed her, she could no longer trust that person. So I think it's a very deep poem. It's short but powerful. I think it happens all too often.
I have to agree. I think that both of you made really thoughtful comments about this. It is a very important moment for the parent and for the child and for that connection, and that unfortunately doesn't go well for a lot of people. Okay. Heavy poems. I absolutely love when people open up in such a vulnerable way in their poetry, but it also makes it really hard to comment sometimes because the poem itself can be written in a beautiful way, but I feel a little strange complimenting it when it expresses such pain. It's a dilemma because I like the poem and yet I feel it. This next poem is by Stephen T. Wellman. A writer's thoughts. Writers paint more than words. A warm celestial solstice is ink of the soul, bleeding bright, beautiful brilliance. Cardiac rhythmics ensue, ethereal, passionate, bold beats. Harmonious rhythms pull at the heartstrings. An orchestral minuet, words weave whimsically, performing a slow, graceful dance. Divine enchantments engage across a white, clear canvas, painting poetic pleasure, eyes fill with mystical moonlight, luminous, lyrical, levitate, capturing the emotive essence. Epic expressions captivate, connecting with all humanity, exposing all the flaws and brokenness that twists and torments the mortal soul. End poem. I think that this touches on how words can be more than just thought. It can be expressive of feeling, as we've seen in our poems tonight, that it can be beautiful. It can create these feelings. I love the way that it's talking about the rhythms pull at the heartstrings, the musical nature of this and how that can connect, sort of like when Lynn was writing about how Leonard Cohen's music affected her in such a powerful way, having this, the words weave whimsically, performing a slow, graceful dance. The power of words is brought to life here. I really liked the alliteration too, luminous, lyrics, levitate. L is a good word. L is not a good word. L is a good letter for consonants or alliteration. Casey, what did you think?
I would have to agree with everything you said. I was also thinking the alliteration in this poem was really nice. He used it throughout, and bleeding bright, beautiful, brilliant. It continues throughout the whole poem, and I think that it's a good choice because we're talking about words and he's a writer, and so words are like his paint. If you were to think of a painter as an artist, words are his medium, right? And so to use alliteration to emphasize that in a creative way, I thought was really masterful.
I have to agree. Using style through words is an appropriate thing in a poem about words. That was a good point. Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, you both had wonderful comments. I really like this poem and how it speaks about the importance of words and how us as poets and writers, you know, we have that ability to express emotions and help people connect with each other and put things into words that sometimes other people struggle to. And I have to give Casey, there's just some wonderful alliteration in here. I really like painting poetic pleasure. Excellent write and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Would you please read the poem by Constance?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. And do that. All right, A Working Friendship by Constance L. Mitchell, and it goes like this. We work together daily. Silence is our daily talk. I wonder why you don't speak to me. I have tried all the conventional ways to become friends. Nothing has worked. How was your evening? Fine. I heard your father has COVID. Is he okay? Are you okay? Yes, thanks. How was your weekend? Fine. Week after week, I try with every conversation starter I know. Two liners back from you are a bonus. I start a conversation. You end it. I am at one conclusion. You don't like me. You never will. You have made this clear, but I will never give up. Your silence is my competition. Your friendship will be my trophy. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great read. And Constance, this is, you know, a struggle that we can have sometimes with our coworkers. Although I think I'm bad for being the quiet one, and it's not so much that I don't like people. I'm just terrible at small talk. just an awkward person in general. So maybe it's not against you personally. I think that there's a valiant effort here to make good conversation, to have things with meaning, to care about what's going on with the person's father and things like that. Two liners back from you are a bonus. You know, some people are like that, very sparse with their words. My dad is like that, where if I send him like this super long email, really detailed, all the things going on, and his answer will be good. Or like one word, two words, two liner would be impressive. Some people don't use their words, and for the people who do, that can be quite challenging because they need words to connect with someone. Words are very important. And for some people, audio words are important. And for some people, written words are important. And there is that kind of impact when the people who are together don't have the same level of word use. I'm saying it terribly. But it's just sometimes it's a mismatch. Silence is my competition. That's interesting. Maybe this person just really likes silence. What did you think, Pam?
Well, I definitely appreciate her honesty in this. And you can tell she has a good heart. She wants to reach out to this person. Personally, I say that, you know, just don't try to become friends with somebody who doesn't want to become friends. But I also like what you had to say, Fabiana, the idea that maybe this person just isn't much in making conversation, and it's not, you know, anything personal or that, you know. So my brother's that same way, too. I ask him questions, and he's got those 1 to 2 word answers. It's like, so how was your day? Good. Okay, would you like to elaborate so this conversation lasts a little longer? You know, kind of like that. But
But I do appreciate the honesty in this, right? And I do appreciate the fact that, you know, she does reach out to this person. And so very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Casey, what did you think?
My first thought is kind of funny, but I thought that Constance is a good name for you because you're constant. I liked the poem. I thought it was interesting. I would have to agree with Pam. If they seem to not want to be friends, I definitely wouldn't push for it because sometimes that ends up not being such a good move. But I did want to also say, so the one-liner type people, I have a brother who is autistic, and he doesn't have very good social cues, right? So he's a one-liner guy, and so there is a chance that maybe this person can't, isn't understanding your social cues or doesn't want to have to try to have a conversation, if that makes sense. It might be difficult for them to converse with you. At the same time, if that's the case, though, they might actually enjoy you trying to strike up a conversation. I don't know. It's kind of a mixed feelings I get with that, but very interesting. I liked it, and I could imagine your personality, Constance, as it was being read. I thought it was really sweet.
No, that's a good point. For some people, it's very challenging to have conversation and to pick up with those social cues. For a while, when I was ill, I had a lot of trouble speaking, and I still stumble on my words sometimes and can't think of the words. But I found talking to people very difficult because I was so self-conscious of how I was speaking. And for some people, it's difficult either mentally or even physically. So just recognizing that people of different abilities or maybe just being neurodiverse can make it very challenging. This next poem, I am actually going to say, like, trigger warning. If violence is particularly difficult for you to hear about, there is violence in this. If homophobia is something that really upsets you, then this could be a difficult one. Just putting that out there of if you have trouble with that, then maybe stop listening for a short time. I really enjoy Rob's writing, but this is a difficult one. So I'm just putting that out there. Casey, would you feel comfortable reading it?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
I'm not sure how to pronounce the name in the poem title. It's.
I'm not either. So just give it a try. It's a South African name, so I'm not sure the language.
And Dio Nutella. Perhaps, Gay Man Mutilated and Remains Burnt by Rob Cohen. On nights when he went to the city, he usually slept at a friend's house. So when Andil went out for a dance and drink on the evening of Easter Friday, without returning home for a full week, it never raised an eyebrow or caused his family to blink and overthink. Several days later, Andalus's close cousin Asanda overheard talk of murder. While buying groceries in a spaza shop, two men said police had found a gay guy burned in the shallow hole of the arrested suspect's backyard. Rushing to the scene of the crime, Asanada knew deep down it was bound to be her cousin, so she called Lulu. When she arrived at the police tape fence, she saw a hole had been dug where cops were digging, picked out sliced up pieces of charred human bones. Through the sliding door of the suspect's house, they found Andil's blood-stained clothes inside a room with splattered blood on the wall. When the accused stepped up for trial in the courtroom dock, he was wearing Andil's peak cap, which he wore on Crucified Friday, mutilated and torched at the township stake, another life cut down for the crime of being gay.
Thank you for reading. This one hits me very hard. It's so painful of a story, and it makes me very sad that things like this are still happening. Like he says in his AN, I got the local paper to see a familiar story in South Africa. Like, this is happening a lot. And that's just devastating to me that this person was killed because of hate and discrimination. This piece is not as fancy and metaphorical and all of that Rob's writing usually is. And he commented, I just wrote and wasn't concerned about editing or trying to show off any of my writing abilities. The content and subject is more important than the art of my piece. And I thought that was a really thoughtful comment for him to say, that he's focused on the subject and that he cares for this person who lost his life and for the situation and for that this is happening in general as a society. There's a lot of feelings there, and he's more focused on the information of the piece, the feelings of the piece, than his words that are usually quite fancy. So I really appreciate that he's giving it the serious consideration. So thank you for bringing the news to light. It's difficult to hear, but it's important that people know what's happening. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, it's a tragedy. It's sad that, you know, such hate and violence still exists, that a young life was cut short, and that it's not an exception. It's not one of those things that rarely happens. And I'm thankful that I read this ahead of time so that, you know, I was prepared, and even with being prepared, it still kind of hits you in the gut and brings tears to your eyes. And I too appreciate that Rob went with the simple language, just simply to share the story, the tragedy, rather than to show off poetic skills. And I think that's a real tribute to both Rob's heart and his genius. You know, it's like this comment I saw on the Poetic Picasso's poem earlier. Somebody said, a genius knows what words to use at different times. I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically what their comment was on the Frank's poem. And that's what Rob has done. He's decided to set aside the metaphors, you know, the surrealism, the abstract that can be interpreted in different ways, and simply say, hey, here's something that's happening. Here's a problem in the world. And so just a sad, right, so important to be shared. And very well done.
Well said, Pam. I completely agree with you. Casey, what were your thoughts?
This poem is it's a tough read. I think
that I agree. I think that Rob did the right thing by honoring the person by removing himself from it, if that makes sense. And not only does it give an awareness of a tragedy that is happening, and it's happening often, but it also pays tribute to the life that was lost and gives that person that honor to continue on and to maybe be in some way turn the tragedy into a good thing, because he's informing people now. So he lives on in a way. I think overall that this poem, as dark and as sad as it is a good thing, because it, out of great tragedy comes a lot of good things. And so I hope that this poem will circulate and people will become aware, and hopefully more good can come from such a sad occurrence.
You know, I think that you're absolutely right, and in sharing these things and expressing our sadness and the horror of it, sometimes good can come of it. Years ago, there was something similar to this that happened where I was going to university, and after that, which was a tragedy that hit everyone very hard, there were a lot of support services and things for the LGBTQ community, and there was a lot more kind of interaction, and I think it actually ended up, you know, forming community, and people had the support that they had been lacking, really acceptance and awareness was made as a result of what happened. So horrible as it is, I hope that you're right that it ends up ending violence or contributing to the end of violence. Well said. Thank you, Casey. If my computer will load, I'm going to read one by Felon. I think my computer is sad. It's decided to be slow for a second, so I'm going to use my phone instead. Multiple screens. Okay, let's see. Late Night Poets. Sorry for the delay. Here we go. Okay. So this is Wording Protection by Felon. Dead moments decay as they reach the surface, shedding every second, taking .0001% of me, baptizing spiritual loss. As I wash away the wounds of the day, some drift off a breeze as death spits, then dormant are pieces clinging to my sleeve. Reform skins the echoes to words you gave. Dermis wears your support as armor, an army to endless warfare, defense to all attacks. Firing headshots, shelled with, fuck them, I got you, aims. Gut punches as giggles turn to laughter at ourselves. Fear strikes when unity barks from our alphas simultaneously. Thick skin allowing my senses to bend close my survival. Courage answers when you send word, wearing your words as a badge of honor to our friendship. End poem. It says, to Nicole for being you. This is really great. I like that. Your words as a badge of honor to our friendship. Sometimes just hearing someone who you love saying something that that can really make a connection. It's funny how a letter or a text or just someone saying something can have such an impact on your day. I have this one friend who I've been friends with since I was 6 years old, and we've lived in different cities for the last 15 years, and she has, like, we joke she has a psychic connection, because anytime I'm having, like, a really bad day, I'll get a text or an email from her that's just kind of like a hi, blah, 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 and just seeing her words always totally cheers me up. So words have an impact, and I really like the way that Felin recognizes that. Casey, what did you think? I'm sorry, I just saw on the board Casey had to go. Yeah. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, wow, yeah, I really like this. As always, you know, Felin writes, they come from the heart, they're hard-hitting. I really like that second stanza, to wash away the wounds of the day. But it's great all the way through, and, you know, it's a wonderful tribute to her friend and to the type of friend that's there for you to remind you of what a strong person you're capable of being and is there by your side. And just an excellent write and very well done.
It is. And Felin does always hit hard in her poems. She has that strength to her.
Absolutely.
So goodbye.
I wish
you
could have called
Casey.
In, but...
Oh, I know. She reads it so well when... Felin always has that emphasis, you know, in her words. You can feel it really makes it hit harder when Felin reads it herself. And she has great comments, too. So hopefully we'll get to hear from her again soon. I know her new work schedule has been challenging for getting to call in.
Oh, absolutely.
Good night, Casey. Thank you so much for joining us. I understand it's late there, so you need to go to sleep, and I totally get that. It was really nice to have you here to read and comment. Pam, I put one up by Anguish, and this is actually from last week. It was a carryover, if you're willing to read that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And this is A Haunting of Sorts by Anguish, and it goes like this. I took a solemn knee to your stinging memory, and placed my tarnished ring upon the gelid finger of every deadened dream the chance left dancing beneath a lifetime of rain. And there I saw your azure eyes, an aging, want-inviting ghost of tender vows left lingering, listless. Real best intentions bottle the voice of time as the hourglass dictates every foul word. And there I heard your whisper, those azure eyes are haunting ashen memories, their anguished residue invading sleeping cells and tainting every waking dream with somber visions buried mid the restless graves of another wasted lifetime. And there I saw your silhouette stark against those uniform rows where stone-cold sentries cased their weathered granite glance upon the burnt-out faces of the unlucky wretches time chose to keep in chains. And there I saw your epitaph and poem.
Excellent read. Thank you, Pam. I really enjoyed this poem. I actually gave it silver in the contest. I think that it really spoke to the prompt. Oh, and I should say the prompt was, what will you do when you realize that memories have chains affixed tight across your soul? Part of you is begging for release, looking for a pardon that is never coming, and the other is willing to do life rather than let go. To be lost, it's someone's memory. He's chaining himself to the memory of this person, and it's very painful, and yet he has to hold on. He's stuck in the memories because that's where the person is. I really liked the section about sleep. Haunting ashen memories, their anguished residue invading sleeping cells and tainting every waking dream with somber visions. There's something about when you're trying to fall asleep and you're just haunted by memories and you have waking dreams, as he says. You can't sleep, but you're lost in that almost dream world, thinking about someone or a time or what could have been, and that loss is really powerful. And then the last stanza that's talking about a graveyard really hit me as well. In terms of form, I really enjoyed that after each stanza, there was one line that stood out, and just a one line, and that always started, and there I saw, or I heard, and there, most of them are, and there I saw, and then it's what he sees, and that goes on to the next stanza. It's a really nice transition. Is there a certain type of poem that does this, Pam? Do you recognize the style?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there could be, but I mean, there's so many different forms out there, and I just don't know them all. I always almost look at it as a way of using lines and stanzas as a form of punctuation, but that's just kind of how I think of it, not like a rule, because it's the idea of like putting those certain lines out there that you want to really stand out. And if you read those lines separately, they almost could be a poem within a poem. So I think that's very clever there.
True. I think that works very nicely there. I can't remember who was who said it, but there was someone who said if you read the last line of every stanza, it gives you a sense of a whole different poem that means something. Beneath a lifetime of rain dictates every foul word of another wasted lifetime. Time chose to keep in chains. Like, this passes that test. I can't remember who said that. I think it might have been Phil. And she said, if it's a great poem, you can just read the sentence that closes each stanza, and it will all come together. And it does. It really does. That is the end of the ones that I prepared. However, I'll throw one of mine on just so, because we have 10 minutes left.
Okay, and then if you have time after yours, I actually wrote to that quote.
Oh, you did? Okay, let's do yours. I didn't see yours. I apologize.
Well, that's because, you know, honestly, I wrote to it after your show was over, and I never put it on your board. I just didn't have time before the show. And I've been doing that National Poetry Month challenge. We're writing a poem a day. So I think I used that to write my poem for that day.
Let's do yours. Let's do yours, because I don't really have anything relevant. Let's do it.
All right. So this was written to the same quote from the poem we just written. This is Beneath Heavy Prisms, and it goes like this. I rejoice embracing yesterday's words chained to my heart, rhythmic scars remembering you, tears falling from mine eyes. A cold nothing shines. You are held within grasping, within hands grasping our time past. Pure laughter disappears beneath heavy prisms. We are lost memories, sharing the space weighed. End poem.
Oh, that is beautiful. Very sad, and I think that Beneath Heavy Prisms is an apt title. I also love the shape that you did where it looks like it's the prisms themselves. And rhythmic scars is a good way to put that. Where is it? You are held within hands grasping our time past. And I'm kind of picturing like it's sliding through your fingers, like you're trying to hold on to this. You're grasping it, but it's becoming a painful thing. And pure laughter is disappearing. And that's such a hard thing when even the best memories are tainted by your grief and start to fade in that happiness. We are lost memories sharing the space, Wade. That is beautifully worded, and I really do love the shape. Was it a specific amount of syllables that you did to make that
happen?
Yes,
well, what it is it's a form called a lantern, which is made to look like those, you know, Chinese or Japanese paper lanterns, and it's usually actually the form itself is usually only one of those stanzas, and basically what it is you always have to center it, and when you can, because that gives it the form, and it's one syllable, two syllables, three syllables, four syllables, and then back to one syllable, and then when you center it, it ends up kind of, if you notice, having that shape. Well, as you mentioned, it does kind of have that shape of the prisms, but it also has that shape of, if you ever seen the paper lanterns used at festivals.
Yeah,
and so, but what I like to do is I find it a really intriguing form to use a chain of them, because I think it kind of has a really neat, consistent way of flowing.
It does. I like the chain.
Thank you.
That's cool. That's really cool. You know, I don't often play with form, but I'm also doing the one poem a day for this month, and I've been doing a few of the form contests to try to go outside of my comfort zone, and it is tricky. Like, I'm impressed with how, like, you kept it so it made sense and it had, like, the emotional impact. I find if I'm focusing on, like, the amount of syllables and stuff like that, I sometimes lose the impact of my words because I'm so focused on finding something that will fit. But yours just, it still hits hard. So
right.
I would
recommend
time
form because, it doesn't have, that's the nice thing about it, it doesn't have to rhyme. Now, you have to be right on the syllable count, but it doesn't have to rhyme. For me, I understand completely what you're saying, especially when it comes to forms that rhyme. It's like finding that perfect word that still conveys the emotion is difficult.
It is. Because I did an ethery, and a lay yesterday, and I found it quite challenging. I don't often give myself that kind of structure, but it's good practice, I think. So you did that
absolutely
beautifully.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the inspiration.
Of course. I love doing contests. I always have like five going. I can't seem to stop at a reasonable number.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's times I click to create a new contest and says, sorry, you can't. You have too many. And I'm like, oh, man.
I know. My phone is full of quotes and pictures and things that I will use as prompts once it lets me do it.
Exactly. Well, I think we got time for yours.
Okay. So this is called Moments in a Jar. Notions have the springy legs of grasshoppers, crashing through doors like Boxing Day shoppers. Ideas are fireflies swept swiftly by gusts of distraction. Lost in the busy scenery, I forget their attraction. Pondering permeates my sieve exclusively when written, escaping the fate of an elusive sock or mitten. Thoughts are paired and shared, raw or chiseled, the importance being captured before they fizzled. Poetry is the butterfly net intended to capture me. Reading list of specimen jars, concepts in captivity. End poem. So that was to the prompt, it is necessary to write if the days are not to slip emptily by. How else indeed to clap the net over the butterfly of the moment? For the moment passes, it is forgotten. The mood is gone. Life itself is gone. That is when the writer scores over his fellows. He catches the changes of his mind on the hop. And that quote is from Vita Sackville West.
Very cool.
So, Pam, would you like to comment?
Absolutely. When did talking about the kind of mean person that said, oh, hell no. But thankfully, I'm not. And this is definitely worth commenting on. Congratulations on a well-deserved goal. You know, the forms, and I know it's not a specific form. I don't think it is anyways, but correct me if I'm wrong. But where you use all the lines together and don't separate into stanzas works really well with this poem because of the fact that your lines flow one into the next as almost like separate thoughts and yet one continuous thought. And some great alliteration with pondering permeates. I like the idea that some thoughts are so elusive and some are paired and shared raw or chiseled. You know, it makes me think of, you know, the, was it Leonardo da Vinci? Who said wrote about had a quote about the stone speaking to him, and he would look at the stone and see the shape that was trapped within it, and that's what I feel like is that sometimes our language, the words we try to form and use and the emotions we try to express come out in such a raw way that we need those people who can look at our words and see the chiseled strength within them. Just an absolutely wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I was super surprised by that gold. It took me by surprise. I just, this was, again, one of those ones where I'm trying to write a poem every day, so I've been picking a contest every day. And, I just connected with that partly because I do tend to forget things if I don't write them down right away, and that was sort of the concept here of like trying to grasp your ideas and how writing can help with that. So I appreciated that contest. I love all poetry for that. The contests really keep me going.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I have to admit, though, with me, with the challenge, the National Poetry Month challenge, I haven't been entering contests for every write simply because sometimes I get to the end of the day, and by the end of my day is like, you know, 2 a.m., and I'm like, oh, shit, now I have to write two poems today, technically, to, you know, keep up. And so sometimes I just whip up what I consider pieces of crap. And I wouldn't enter into a contest, but that's just me, you know. I'm overly picky.
I don't think you've ever created a piece of crap. I really enjoy your poems. I was loving the orange one earlier today. I was like, Pam makes food so sexy, and my husband's like, who, what?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I just needed something.
It was good. I had an orange.
I had a couple oranges after writing that.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, this has been a great show of Faziana, and we're down to the last like 90 seconds, so go ahead and wrap it up as you see fit.
All right. So the next week's contest is, to the quote, one day your skull will be as empty as a conch shell on a fence post, full of wind and gentle quiet. Today it's a cauldron of ghosts, flesh and electricity, water and memory, a machine that makes reality. Now, here, your skull is the garden where fact flowers into meaning. So if you are inspired by that, everybody, enter my contest and you can be on next week's show. Thank you so much to Pam, to Lynn, Frank, Casey, and am I missing a caller? I think that's everyone who called
Frankie.
In.
That's everybody, yep.
And everyone who wrote for the contest and made SoundClouds, your poetry is what we are all about. So thank you so much. And also thank you to Phil for giving me the opportunity to have this show. Make sure to check out Late Night Poets for more contests, more shows, and the anthologies where you can read the poetry. Good night, Pam.
Good night, Evasiana. Good night, everyone.